Okay, we're going to begin a little differently today. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2014. It's Beis Rosh Chodesh Iyar, where stand the week. I'm happy to see Vic Snow. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Rofech Oled, that's what... I'm very happy to see Vic Snow. And Vic, I'll tell you the following. I'll tell you something that just happened to me. So I'm going to Chutz Laretz for 2 weeks, Shavuot and the week afterwards. And I'm giving talks, certain talks here, there, everywhere. So I'm not overwhelmed by the crowd. I talk, big deal, all right. But there's one talk that's being given where there's going to be a lot of Talmidei Chachamim. They want me to give a certain talk because there's been machlokas in the community. And I prepared that talk. Is already prepared. And I felt, I'm a big shot. This talk, I have all of Shas and Paiskim and what I threw around, what I put into it. And I walked away, look, a Ben Adam could achieve. And 1 minute later, I got news about a great Talmud Chacham and his condition. And I went from the mountain to the valley in 1 second flat. So I just want to tell you, I'm mensch bleibt the mensch. And thank God we're here, we're smiling. When I called, and I called the room, because it was after Shia, I'm fatumult, I'm exhausted. So evidently called the Berkowitzes, and not you, that's your niece, right? What's the relationship?
Friends.
And she was my student, right. And she tells me, and then she tells me you were ill. So I'm the happiest person alive. And you can ask Morty. I said to Morty, after Shia today, if it doesn't show, remind me to call him. Okay. I just want to say, we live in the state of Israel, and we're a different type of people here. Everything I saw was in Beit Shemesh on Shabbos, and I'm still overwhelmed by the wonderful reception I got. And we do certain things in life. And we're different than the people we left behind in Teaneck and in Brookline, Maplewood in South Orange, New Jersey. We're different. We're a different type of Jews, plain and simple. And I'm proud of it. So I want to tell you, we have someone sitting in the room. I want him to come up front and speak for just 4 or 5 minutes and tell you what he did. An article appeared in the newspapers. So you saw the article, you didn't see the article. Acherei 25 shana chatuna yehudit lechola hasofane. An article, I'm holding the article from Yisrael Hayom. I'll translate it into English for the people listening across the world who may not know modern Hebrew. Chola sofane, it's a modern word. I didn't know that word when I came in Aliyah. After 25 years, a Jewish wedding for a person who, I don't even know how to say it in English now, terminally ill, okay? Now, here's the story. Rabbi Rubin, tell the class your story, please. Tell the people your story. Yeah, I wanted to go into the microphone, and no one should tell me from South Africa that they had trouble hearing you. And I also want you to know, Yitzhak and I go back. I know him yet when we were high school kids. He was in Boston, and I was in New York. B'nai Kiva, and we were in Bachat together, we even in high school already. Then he came to Yeshiva College. And I'll give out copies, whoever wants later, of the article. And I want you to know, Yitzchak doesn't get a penny for this. I just want the people to know this person, I hope I'm like Yitzchak. Hands are totally clean. Go ahead.
Tell them. In 1999, I retired from Misrad HaChinuch. And at that time, I did two things that affected my life and enriched it. One is my friend Aaron Rakefet, who allowed me to become a member of the class. So since 1999, I have attended class on Sunday nights and then Monday morning, and I have learned a lot. Second, I did what I wanted to do for many years, to teach. And my knack is to bring people who don't have any background at all to understand and what the Rav called the romance of Yahadut, meaning the beauty of Judaism as a total Weltanschauung, meaning it's not just putting on tefillin, but it also relates to society, and using an idea of Leo Jung, that it's man to God, man to self, and man to world. Now, how do you do that? So it's not just a matter of teaching converts. So the RCA had a conversion program, the Rabbinical Council of America, made up of four or five men. And I spoke to Rabbi Mervis, who was the director of the program, and I became a member of the faculty. So for 10 years, I taught converts. They usually had about 20, 25 people. And I innovated a number of things. One of them was to go with them to the Beit Din. So it wouldn't be like Daniel in the lion's den, to give them chizuk when they're sitting there. And I always felt that my presence would indicate that I'm giving edut, that the person is good. Then when the program stopped, I continued as a volunteer and had taught and became friends, because it wasn't just teaching. It was getting part of the life of the person, because these people was just not, they could read a book, but they need to feel that they're being welcomed into a people. And the only way you do that is through the friendship of the teacher, which reminded me of Rabbi Wolgemuth and Rabbi Simon, who were my teachers in high school. And their method of teaching was not just knowledge being imparted. It was how they related.
High school is Maimonides in Boston, the yeshiva, of course, that the Rebbe established back in the mid-1930s.
Now, so in the meanwhile, Rabbi Druckmann, Rav Chaim Druckmann, who I knew when I was a B'nai Akiva person, together with Rav Aaron Rakefet.
Tzaddik Yisod Olam, Rav Chaim Druckmann. Tzaddik Yisod Olam.
He is. He truly is. So he started an organization called Ami, which pays teachers to teach converts. So when they called me and asked me if I would do that for them in the Jerusalem area, I said, only in one condition, that is that I don't get paid. I said, I don't want anyone to think that the reason I'm backing someone as a candidate for conversion at the Beit Din is because afterwards I'm going to get a check. So I have brought, I must tell you, I was debating to say this or not, but 136 people to the Beit Din in the last 19 years. Now, so to come to this case, I get a phone call from Ami, this man and his wife who would like to convert, and it has to be done quickly because he has terminal cancer in the brain. He himself is a doctor, Shari Tzedek, orthopedic surgeon, and she is a teacher. And I said, okay, I'll go meet them because I don't want to commit myself. I went to meet them, and I saw that they were very fine people, and I was very taken by his desire. So I set up with them Sunday for 2 hours and Thursday for 2 hours. And this went on for a few months. And then I got a phone call that they have to come and open a tick, a file, at the Beit Din. So I prepared myself a little bit emotionally that I'm going to present to them that they should, and I spoke to Aaron, I should present to them why they should be lenient or why they should move it along. And they asked him one or two questions, and then they said to him, can you bring a letter from a doctor that circumcision will not be, can be done even while you're taking chemotherapy? So I almost started to cry, I must tell the truth, because I didn't have to say a word. Rav Lifshitz was one of the Rabbonim, who I have seen him at Bat Edin, where he's really kashuach, I mean, tough. Here, he was sweet and beautiful and mellow and kind and chesed. So they set up Ezer Mitzion, is an organization that does not charge, and an ambulance from Yerushalayim to take him to Tel Aviv, where Brit Mila was done.
This is all done by the Beit Din, that the leftist press is constantly criticizing, right, at no cost to the people involved.
No cost at all. And Ezer Mitzion didn't charge for the ambulance. Then we continued studying, and he was getting over the Brit Mila. And then they called up and they said, we want to see the wife. So her name is Vlada. His name is Uri, now it's Uri, and her name is now Leah. So she went, and they quizzed her for about 20, 25 minutes, and when they saw that she knows the material, I had given her two books. One was Eliezer Berkowitz, God, Man, and History. Today, on their level, they could understand it, because that's one of the only books I knew that honestly dealt with a problem which is similar to the way the Rove did it, of theodicy, God in a world where the Holocaust takes place, and what man's function is in such an incomplete world. And then they say to her, we have set up already mikveh for 2 weeks. You go to mikveh, and your husband will go to mikveh, the section men, women, and then afterwards the chuppah will take place. They didn't ask her, they told her. And then the chuppah will take place. And kachoya. So it shows you, I felt I got a reward. What was my reward? I was given, when they had the Sheva Brachos, I was given the first four Brachos. I choked, but that meant a lot to me. I must tell you the truth, because this was something very nice. That here is a man who we don't know how much more he has. He could be here for 7 weeks or 7 years. And because hopefully the longer he lasts, maybe they'll find something that will work on the cancer. So I don't like to talk a lot about myself, but this is something that has given me a lot in my life, to feel part of the lives of these people who, you see, when it says, Beit Yisroel Baruch Hashem, Beis Aaron Baruch Hashem, that we know who they are. Mize Yirei Hashem Baruch Hashem. So the Rav said, Yirei Hashem are the God-fearers among the nations. We have to believe, contrary, I don't want to get into it about the Rebbe and Chabad and all that, that a Goy has a Neshama, Tahora, not different than ours. I know that Chabad has a different knack on that, but I think that if you have to take Rav Shneur Zalman here, and God here, HaKadosh Baruch was the one who wrote the Torah. So his volume is more weighty than Rav Shneur Zalman's. And that, and in the Torah it says, Yivra Adam B'tzalmo. Adam means a human being, not just a Jew. So, of course, the Goyim have not had a good track record. But once in a while, you find the person whose neshama feels empty. And they want, it's not because they're from Zeri Yisrael, you know, great-grandfather. First question people ask, maybe his grandfather was Jewish. I'm telling you, there was nothing Jewish about this man before. And not only that, we had a whole session about Christianity, because he was active as a child in the Russian Orthodox Church. And he said, do I have to give up my belief in Jesus? It was like new to him, the whole thing. But he realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have someone else. So that's, I think, is...
And I guess I want to add that from what I know through Yitzchak, this doctor, world-class in his field, could have gone anywhere in the world when he came out of Russia. And he chose to come to Israel with his wife and four children. And he was so impressed with the way he was treated in Shaarei Tzedek and the quality of the people he dealt with, that he only wanted to die a Jew. And you read the interview here with his daughter, that for years he played around with the idea of becoming Jewish, but he was busy, a medical doctor, had a big responsibility. Unfortunately, people are dying to get into hospitals, and you can take it figuratively and literally. And he never had time to complete his wish. And then when he found out he has this terminal illness, he said, I want to be buried as a Jew, I must convert. And Yitzchak tells me there's Shoma Mitzvah, Shoma Shabbat, Shoma Kashrut. And I'm proud to say that Rabbi Rubin is my friend, my colleague, my student. I'm proud to say. Okay? So, no, I want the world to hear. They should know, you know, the anti-rabbinate and anti-Israel and Baruch Hashem. We have a lot to be proud of. Those of us that have come in Aliyah are Jews on a different level, in my humble opinion. Now, coming back to the material on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, a number of very interesting comments. someone named Eliezer Drew gave me the Yichus. We're talking about the Riyadz, the sixth Rebbe. I didn't know this. Achara, I knew that Acharam. Years ago, I lectured on Acharam in this class when I dealt with Zionism. Those of you who know the history of Zionism, know cultural Zionism, Acharam. I've lectured on Acharam when I deal with the Rav. Over the decades, I've touched upon Acharam. So I knew, I always would tell everyone he came from, I can't go into detail now, it would take too long, but I knew he came from a Hasidic background. It turns out his wife was the Riyatz's first cousin. Thus, Rivka Ginsburg, Acharam is Asher Ginsburg, right? Acharam, thus Rivka Ginsburg was the first cousin of the Rebbe Riyatz. Her father was the Rebbe Riyatz's mother's brother. So that's a very fascinating who Acharam came from, who he married. I wonder if he has any descendants. Did he have children? Does he have any descendants? It would be fascinating to know. Acharam, Bialik, there's some niece, a movie actress, a movie star, a TV star out on the coast who's awakened to her Judaism. Be interesting to know. Now, if you recall, we mentioned a source where the Lubavitcher Rebbe talks about learning Torah Tisha B'Av afternoon. And we said in class, if you recall, that as far as a dummy like Aaron Rakefet knows, you're not allowed to learn Torah Tisha B'Av. The only thing that switches from the morning to the afternoon is you can sit down on a chair. I know that I'm the happiest guy alive when it hits Tisha B'Av. Generally, you have to wait till 1 o'clock because there's daylight savings. But I'm the happiest guy alive. Because when you grow older and you need support for your back, etc., I can sit down on a chair like a normal human being. But as far as I know, what you can learn in the morning, churban bayit, the sugya nikitin, you can learn in the afternoon. But what you can't learn in the morning, you can't learn in the afternoon. So R.A.K. informs me, in the last year, you mentioned the letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe regarding learning Tisha B'Av afternoon. There is an accepted minhag in Chabad to learn the daily Shei'urim on Tisha B'Av in the afternoon, but not the morning. And I'll tell you what this means. In Chabad, a good Chabadnik knows what Chitat means. Chitat means fear. Fear, for Chabad it means, and they publish it, Chumish Tehillim in Tanya, in one volume. And every day you're supposed to learn a part of the Mavis Sedra, you're supposed to learn a part of Tehillim, and you're supposed to learn a part of Tanya every day. So this is like davening. We daven, don't we? In the morning we leave out parts of the davening, but we do say them at mincha time, the Shir Shel Yom. Some people have a minute to say the Kavanot. Some people say over Kriyat Shema in the afternoon because you're putting on tefillin. So that's the minhag Chabad, that in the morning you don't learn your daily Seder Chitat, but in the afternoon you do. And that's very fascinating. Finally, and most important, and this is something that I touch upon in Washington, and it's a big problem. If you remember, I said in class that Chabadnikim are not totally happy with Telushkin's book. They feel it's a modern Orthodox Jew viewing the Rebbe, which it is. The Rabbi Telushkin doesn't pull any bones about it. It's his take on the Rebbe. Chaim Miller's book, which I said meets the standards of scholarship, I can see it. It's every bit as scholarly as two fabulous volumes that I know of that are biographies. They've gone through four editions already. Bernard Revel, The Silver Era. So what? But Chabadnikim say he makes it too scholarly. You lose the fear, the awe of the Rebbe. So Yitz Gold writes to me, the issue Chabadnikim have with Miller's book is that he said it was done from the prism of a chassid. However, he keeps referring to the Rebbe as Menachem Mendel, even after his smicha, etc. Many felt was a bit chutzpahdik. Ah, so I have to tell you, that is a real problem. Those of you who have studied Washington know that I deal with it. I had exactly the same problem. How do I write about Rabbi Revel? How do I write about Rabbi Silva? When you write scholarship, you don't use titles. And yet, how could I not use titles? These Gedolei Yisrael. So I want you to know, and I write about this, I spoke with Chaim Potok. I owe a great deal, Zichrono Levracha. I grew up with the Potok family in the Bronx. Simon Zichrono Levracha was my classmate for 16 years. Elementary yeshiva, high school, college, then he went to JTS. It was Chaim's younger brother. You have studied by Chaim Potok's nephew, Rav Tzvi Sabalovsky. His mother is a Potok. She was the youngest child. She was the kid's sister. I remember them well. The parents, the Potoks, the parents, the grandparents, were the among the few Jews I knew who were Shomer Shabbos in the Bronx. They had a jewelry store in the Tremont Avenue section that was closed on Shabbos. Yeah, the only ones closed were butchers. And the butchers themselves were Mechallelei Shabbos, but they couldn't keep the store open because they couldn't get it. You follow me, Eli? And Chaim's parents were Shomer Mitzvah. So I spoke with him, what do I do? So we reached the following conclusion. Because if you keep on writing, Rabbi, 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 Doctor, what? We spoke about it yesterday in class. Yesterday, sure, with Baruch Hashem. Some people were blown away. So yesterday, Shir, if you listen, you pick up what I'm talking about. I spoke about the Rav. Oh, you missed it. I always know. No matter what happens, Jay, I wind up talking about the Rav. What can I tell you? The Rav. The letter, how he signed the letter to Rabbi. You'll hear it on the tape. So this is a real problem. And if you keep on writing, Rabbi, 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 it becomes like Otsko. You know, it's like you're telling fairy tales, apocryphal tales. Rabbi, 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 Tzadik Yisholol and Chassid, born with a kippah in his head, never sinned in his life, never looked at a newspaper, read a paper, Leil Shabbat, impossible, call back the book, etc. So it's a problem. So we reached the conclusion that the first time I talk about, let's say, I introduce Reb Aaron Cutler into the Silva book, I give him his whole background, his titles. After that, I refer to him, and it's not easy. I add the Rosh Yeshiva, Cutler, same thing with the Rav. I introduce the Rav, that's my Rebbe, all the titles. But afterwards, I don't want to take away. I don't want him to turn into an obscure figure. He's a tremendous individual. But he had a last name, Soloveitchik. So it's a delicate, delicate question. If you read what I wrote in Washington, I tell you how I got my head chopped off. No matter what I did, either I was complimented, Rabbi Lamb calls me, don't leave out the criticisms by Trudy Rosemarin of Silver, you know, with the Kashrut. You got to know who these people were. And she was, you know, had been Orthodox, and now she was a Reconstructionist. I think her husband, I think they got divorced. I understand how the...
She wanted a get, and he wouldn't give it.
He wouldn't give her a get.
So she
left Yiddishkeit. I know that their children, I'm told their great-grandchildren, all wearing black hats that they probably wouldn't walk into IU. It's not firm enough. So something went right or something went wrong there. Call it what you wish. But so Rabbi Lamb says to me, I said, no, I have it. It's in the manuscript. And sure enough, if you read the Silver, I give you the critique of Rabbi Silva. Don't you think I get a letter from his daughter? You know, Derek Eretz, don't misunderstand me. We're very good friends. And she said, Sadeket Yisrael, the Olam lives in her husband, is Echad Megedolei Yisrael, the Israeli Sfadik singer, Rav David Chai Kohen. But she, how can you write that? This Trudy Rosemarin criticized my father, you know? I couldn't win no matter what I did. I give you a few examples. And one time in, what was it, Nei Yisrael, Rebbe Yitzvei, ripped the hell out of me in public. He says, yes, this Rothkopf, whenever he knows me as Rothkopf, and I knew him from the rabbinate in Philadelphia, says, whenever he mentions his Rebbe, he gives all the titles, and Rabbi Aaron Cutler is Cutler, and he went berserk. So a student told me, I said, open up the book and see how many times I use Cutler, how many times I use Soloveitchik. And then, Jason, you can open your mouth and either criticize me or praise me. But I have to say, it's a delicate area, and as one who... I have my own viewpoint. I'm not telling you again. You know, I don't force my viewpoint upon anyone, and I'm not telling you I'm right. I'm not telling you it's Torah Sinai. I'm not telling you it's Das Torah. But one thing I can say, I read the Miller book, and the feeling I get is one of admiration and respect for the Rebbe. He calls him Menachem Mendel at times. You can't avoid that. I had an incident. Do me a favor, Yomel, turn off the... I had an incident, and I'll be honest, I don't want to mention the name, but someone who's a big Talmud Chacham, but a little bit eccentric, a little bit... who are made b'toch pinah, he's not part of the mainstream. But he's a tremendous Eurasian Mayim and Talmud Chacham, and I know him well. And I once had an interview with him. I had a picture of him, and I published it at his bar mitzvah, because of the people who were at the bar mitzvah. And he says, why didn't you write this as a 13-year-old kid, a little schnick yingle at his bar mitzvah? He comes from Gedolei Yisrael, absolutely. I should have written rabbi next to his name. I looked at him, a 13-year-old kid. What can I do? Well, you understand, his name was what it was. Well, if I'm going to write about him at the age of 25, then I'll write rabbi. Okay, anyway, with that being said, let's pick up. Today is a very important and a very fascinating shiur. Now, if you recall before Pesach, we had, here you have this brilliant son of Reb Levi Yitzchak, part of the Schneerson family, and even in those days before the internet and before the computer, before email, before faxes, nevertheless, the entire Lubavitcher world had an underground information system, and everyone knew that Reb Menachem Mendel, the son of Reb Levi Yitzchak, is something special. In 1923, he meets the Rebbe for the first time. They make a shidduch with the Rebbe's daughter. At the time, the Rebbe is only 20 years of age. 5 years go by before they marry. During these 5 years, periodically, the seventh Rebbe to be comes to the sixth Rebbe, helps the sixth Rebbe, attends Fabregins, speaks at the sixth Rebbe's request, and he develops tremendous love, admiration, and totally self-negation, hitbatlut atzmit, in front of the sixth Rebbe. His self-negation is so strong, and I spoke about it, it's overwhelming to me. I walked out of class, whenever I think of it, I laugh. Overwhelming, and Rabbi and kol hakavod to Rabbi Steinsaltz, who's so insightful and perceptive, that he wants the Rebbe giving his sicha speaks about an ish mushlam, an oiska abita mensch, and one of the things you have to know how to do, nu yomo, tell the class, ride a horse, not drive a car. The sixth Rebbe had no license to drive, but he knew how to ride a horse. Avram, das macht an eiska abita mensch, adam mishlam. And finally, people started saying about the relationship between the sixth and seventh Rebbe. The sixth Rebbe has one real chassid, Reb Menachem Mendel. Okay. Fascinating. Now, when you read the biographies about Reb Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and I've quoted a number of them, and I'll quote more, some of them are written from within, some of them are written from without. The ones that are written from without, it's like there's a shmua, there's like an underground current. Who ever heard of a chatan v'kala in the Hasidic world? 5 years between engagement to marriage. Unheard of. Even we are Litvisha here. I got engaged, I got married. I wanted to get married like 10 months later, but I was frightened and stiff of the Yerodea Bechinus, so it was maybe a year and a few months later. But it didn't help me because the Rav was ill, they delayed everything, and it went up that I got married a week before the final Bechinut for Yerodea, not Smicha, it was a year earlier, it was for Yerodea. And I remember Ray Weinberg made his wedding purposely 1 week after mine to be sure the Bechinut would be over, and the final Yerodea Bechinut fell exactly on the day of his wedding. Okay, and if you meet him in Haifa, ask Rafal if he remembers. I see people don't remember. I saw that in Beit Shemesh. I met people I know 80 years ago, 70 years ago. I was reminding them of things that happened 75 years ago. They looked at me and I said, no, you say that. I guess you remember what you want to remember. Baruch Hashem, life moves on. So people, they start to attack the Rebbe, you know, as if, gentlemen, ladies, it is so simple. You got to understand the times the Rebbe is in Russia. These people are in Riga. The sixth Rebbe has been exiled. The seventh Rebbe is trying to get out, is traveling, is going, is moving, he's here, he's there. He can't go back to see his parents anymore. You know what it means in a Hasidic world? You know what it means for a Ben Torah who loves his parents to marry without his parents being there? Have you ever heard of such a thing? I mean, we have it. No, give me an example where we have it. The Rav was caught in that quagmire. And that's the famous story that I write about in the... I hope I wrote about it. Maybe I told it already, but I think I did put it into the Rav. You have the wedding invitation, right, Jay? So you know this story. Reb Moshe already was in America. The Rav is now informing his Rebbe, his father, his Rebbe Muvhak, Shaliva Shalom Shalohu, whom he's marrying. And Reb Moshe is very upset. How can you get married? I'm not there. I don't know the family. All right, this is a litvak. So the Rav writes back to Rabbi Lewittis was sitting in the class when Reb Moshe read the letter to the class. I quoted in the movie, I think, as well. The Rav writes back to his father, quoting Hilchot Kibbud Av Vayim in Yerodea, that if you want to marry a girl and your father objects, as long as you know she's a religious girl, it's tzad de gufei. You go ahead and marry her. It's not a nullification of kibbud av yom. That's what the Rav wrote back to his father. And his father brings the letter into class and he reads the letter. Rabbi Lewittis told me, this was in the first graduating class of Yeshiva College, 1932. Rav Mendel Lewittis, later rabbi in Boston area, later rabbi in Montreal, comes on Aliyah from Montreal many, many years later. Well-known name, a big Talmud Chacham, an author, a philosopher, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Lewittis. Mendel Lewittis was my neighbor, 18 Berlin, age 1969. When he came in Aliyah, we all were in that building together. So Lewittis says, Rav Moshe opens the letter, he reads the letter to the class, mein zun is gerecht, what could he do? These are litvaken. You quote an open halacha, you quote a ramah, it ends it. But in the Hasidic world, you're going to get married without your father and mother being there? So that's, you have to understand, that was part of the five-year drought. It's not that they were running away and not that they had doubts. It was a meridic shidduch, a wonderful shidduch. But there were the realities of life. But there's more to it. You've got to remember, and this becomes very important. The Riatz, the sixth Rebbe, who's going through hell, he fought the communists. I say, and I say it again, no one fought the communists among the Jews more than the Chabadnikim. how many Chabadnikim were executed, how many Chabadnikim were exiled, including the seventh Rebbe's own father. No one fought the communism war. The sixth Rebbe was arrested. He was sentenced to death. They didn't know what to do with him. There was a tremendous outcry. Finally, they threw him out of the country. Why let him cause problems within? And they threw him out to Riga. Ultimately, from Riga, he goes to Warsaw, but now he's in Riga, and he's still trying to work the underground. There's money pouring in. There's still branches of Tomchei Tamimim, right? That's the name of the Chabad Yeshiva. And remember, he's in charge of Tomchei Tamimim. The fifth Rebbe appointed the Riats to run Tomchei Tamimim. Well, what do you show me? Ay, Baruch Dayan Emet. Ay. Very bad news. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein died. Very bad news. Baruch Dayan Emet. I knew he was sinking, but wow. They say from before Pesach till after Pesach, the whole world changed. Wow. But we'll dedicate the rest of the shiur, we'll dedicate to Rabbi Aaron's memory. Ugh. Part of my life is gone. Where were we? So the sixth Rebbe, who was appointed by the fifth Rebbe to be in charge of the Tomchei Tamimim Yeshivat, was Maisa Nefesh. This was a period, critical period for Chabad. And there were so many problems happening that the wedding kept on being put first on the back burner, then it was brought a little closer. Finally, in 1928, the sixth Rebbe makes a major affair in Warsaw. People called it the wedding of the century. I don't know if it can be called the wedding of the century. Chabadnikim or Hasidim in general have a tradition that whenever there is a Rebbe wedding, it becomes an affair for tens and 20,000 plus Hasidim. It's inspiration. You have to understand the Hasidic world. The Hasidic world works with Yerusha, inheritance. Those of you who live in the state of Israel and so on in Beit Shemesh told my wife, yes, we live 3 minutes from the state of Israel. So those of you who live in the state of Israel, if you know what's going on about Rabbi Wuzna now, there's a tremendous machloket. People want the son to succeed. People say the son's not on that level. And part of the machloket is that Rabbi Wuzna was not a Hasidic Rebbe. It doesn't go with Jerusha. You have to be on that level. That's why whenever I would refer to Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, I would go out of my way to say, I know the world says Rabbi Aaron is the Rav's son-in-law, but I want you to know that had he not been the Rav's son-in-law, he would still be Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. In his own right, he was Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. That doesn't go in the Hasidic world. Hasidic world, there is yichus, a Rebbe, continuity. Remember, the world of Rakefet is a world of learning. I'm a Litvak. I told you 1,000 times over. I respect nobody unless he can learn better than I can. I'll be a nice guy, but oh boy, I don't know. A guy can learn better than me? I bow before him. And we're Litvakin. This is why we can tolerate what can I tell you? I always used to quote Rabbi Nathan Zuber, who was a student in Tomchei Tamimim. You recall what I quoted? And he always used to boast that the sixth Rebbe said to him, Nassim, a London bistu of a grace shaget seichet. You're a big Talmud Chacham, but you're a big shagets as well. And only a litma can boast like that. But we're a different world. The chassidish world, the Rebbe is marrying off a daughter to a cousin who's a giant. Continuity, what the future will bring. The chassidim are jumping for joy. That's number one. That's every chassidic wedding. Number two, what was particularly important at this time, the Rebbe wanted the world to know Chabad continues and to give encouragement to the thousands of Chabadnikim suffering under the communists. And what gives encouragement? There's a Rebbe, there's a wedding, there's continuity. It's not going to end. There's a world outside of Russia, the Jew, Hasidus, Chabad, alive and kicking. And I want to tell you, there's a lot to be learned from this. And I'll bring you into modern times, or what we experienced. The operation from the Mossad to Russia, the Nativ, what the Machlaka called Nativ, right? Nativ, Path, the book that came out, Nativ Hadmama, the Silent Path. That operation functioned on two levels. On one level, we had to teach Torah, teach the history of Zionism, teach Hebrew, give knowledge. For that level, you needed people the caliber of Rabbi Rubin. Okay. You as truly as you know, I sent over 200 shlichim on that level. In addition, for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuot, college kids were sent over the years by the hundreds into Russia. And I sent some of my own students, I sent some of my own children. And I once asked Aryeh Kroll, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the person in the Mossad who later when gets Pras Yisrael, I don't want to start telling you Aryeh Kroll is, it'll take an hour, but this man has tremendous zchuyot. I asked Aryeh Kroll, I said, Aryeh, you're a Talmud, your father was a Shaykhet, your great uncles were Rosh Yeshiva and Slabatka. You know what a Talmud Chacham is? What good does it do you to send these kids in? They can't teach the way. The people we're sending all year, what's the purpose? And you got to remember, you're pouring in a fortune of money. These kids don't go for nothing. So Aryeh told me a very interesting answer. He said it's very important a kid should come in and get maftir in the main synagogue in Moscow, the only synagogue, in the synagogue in Leningrad today, Petersburg, St. Petersburg. Why? To show that Judaism is alive. That the Jews in Russia should see it hasn't ended. The communists are feeding them propaganda. It's all over. There's a new world. There's no concept of nationalism. We are all one people. Workers of the world, unite. We are the future. And this was the message. An American kid gets up. A kid gets up. They weren't allowed to know these kids are living in Israel, are from Israel, but many of them were from America, were from England, were from Australia, were from Canada. We couldn't send from South Africa. You can understand why, because of the interrelationship between Russia and South Africa. But England, Canada, Australia, wow. And the people there, you know, downtrodden, listening to all this communist propaganda, they would walk out of shul, Nemakuk, a younger man, was for Shena Haftarat Gesagt. Take a look, a young man, what a beautiful Haftorah he read. Nemakuk, a can daven in Famamid, he knows how to daven, a can ivra, a younger man, an Americana. an Americana geboren, I'm an American born. And this was very, very important point, Alex, what I'm saying. Because people, there is some criticism. Why did the Rebbe make such an elaborate wedding? You understand? They didn't understand why the Rebbe's making an elaborate wedding. Because every chassid in the world, including those behind the Iron Curtain, knew that there was a wedding, knew that there was a tomorrow, knew that there was continuity, knew that there was hemshechiyut. Okay? Yeah, at least he didn't suffer. At least he didn't suffer. At least he didn't suffer. Plus, when I spoke yesterday with his son, and the report I got, it was Alzheimer, and it was starting to go in an advanced state, and the Rav was like that for so many years, and at least Rav Aaron didn't suffer. Okay? At least he didn't suffer. Now, why did he choose Warsaw for the wedding? The sixth Rebbe was perhaps what he considered his greatest achievement was building Tomchei Tamimim. And here you have to understand, the Hasidic world did not have yeshivat. A yeshiva was a Lithuanian invention in modern times. I'm not talking now Sura Pompidita. I'm talking from the time we come out of the ghetto. There was no concept of yeshiva. In before the modern world, a kid grew up, you daven three times a day. You sat in the Beis Medrash. You went to cheder. You didn't have great ability, you went to work. You were from, the whole world was from. You had ability, you sat in the Beis Medrash, and every rav of every shtat was, you will see the titles, Av Beitin Veresh Metifta. The rav gave shiurim, a dayan gave shiurim. There was someone to talk with and learning. It was haphazard, it was desultory, it wasn't organized, but this system worked before enlightenment. With enlightenment and the winds coming in, you have a challenge. And this is where Rav Chaim Volozhin organizes a yeshiva that we should have for the brightest individuals. It wasn't for the masses, but for the brightest individuals, irrespective of where they're from, they should learn in an organized fashion. Rabbeim who were master teachers, gradations, bechinat, exams, it should guarantee that there'll be lamdanim for tomorrow. And that's a litvisher concept. The Hasidic world functioned around the Rebbe's court. And in every Rebbe's court, there was shayurim, there was learning, there was a Beit Medrash, some people were serious, some people were jokers. It was half and half. Partially like before the Enlightenment, a little bit more serious because it was after the Enlightenment. Lubavitch, the fifth Rebbe, called upon the organization of a real yeshiva under Chabad aegis. And this was Tomchei Tamimim. And this is what he assigned his son, the Riatz, at a very early age. The Riatz, read his biography. You'll see at a very early age, he became a world-class personality in the Chabad movement, responsible for the yeshiva, responsible for perpetuating Torah, responsible for all that was happening in communist Russia, which already the sixth Rebbe, the fifth Rebbe was towards the end of his life. He dies in 1920. Already it was the sixth Rebbe who was doing all the connections, the functioning, the fundraising, the theory, the guidance. And Tomchei Tamimim catches on. It becomes like a reshet of yeshivat. It's not just one yeshiva. Wherever there are Chabadnikim, you have Tomchei Tamimim. Now the apex and the crowning glory of these yeshivot was in Warsaw. Poland at this point is free. Poland in the interbellum period between World War I to World War II is free. Poland, Baruch Hashem, Jews are thriving. 10% of the population is Jewish. Hundreds of thousands of Jews live in Warsaw. That's where the main yeshiva was. And that's where the Rebbe wanted the wedding to be, with the Tomchei Tamimim. So you see, there are many factors here. Why such a beautiful chasana? Why such a big chasana? Why, and you'll see in a minute, the intricate planning that went into the wedding. And why Warsaw? Why not Riga? Could have had the wedding in Riga. The Rebbe was out of communist Russia. The Rebbe's parents are not going to get to the wedding no matter what. Why Warsaw? Because Warsaw was Ir V'Ein B'Yisrael. You a simple proof? No? When the Rav's family escapes from Russia, from the communists, where do they go to when they run out of Chaslovich? They go to Warsaw. Right or wrong? The Rav has many memories of Warsaw. Shulamit Meiselman, have you read her volume, studied her volume, the Soloveitchik Heritage, her memoir? Read about her memories of Warsaw. And it left a deep impact on their souls. It could very well be that the reason the Soloveitchik family was so successful, and I don't know if I mentioned this here, mentioned this in Beit Shemesh, I forget where, mentioned it in private conversation. But remember, if Moshe Soloveitchik comes to America, five of his children, five out of five, all live in America. The Rav was married, everyone else comes to America, children yet being educated. All five remain from. It is very hard to find other Rabbanim in America at that time, from Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael, from Hasidic Rebbeim. I don't want to give you examples. Lo Na'im Li. They didn't succeed with all their children. Not at all. It may even be they didn't succeed with the majority of their children. As long as I live, I'll never forget Mr. Jacob Palestine. You don't recognize the name. We'll talk about him next year, Bezrat Hashem. He was the executive secretary of the Agudas HaRabbanim. He was an Israeli, Bamakar, wound up in America, I don't know, before World War I, after World War I. And he ran the Agudas HaRabbanim. He was very capable, a Talmud Chacham, and he knew English, and he knew Hebrew, and Yiddish, and he typed in all languages. He was the executive secretary. Now, that and a man with seichel. It turned out in his old years, later years, he came back to Israel, lived on Rehov Palmach. I taught his granddaughter in Mechlala, and I became very friendly with him and interviewed him extensively in the 70s. You see footnotes in Suva era, Mr. Jacob Palestine. I was privileged to know him. So he told me something very simple. He said to me, my son, who was the father of the girl I taught in Mechala, and he said to me, he went to medical school. He's sitting in the cafeteria. Right opposite him is the son of one of the presidium members of the Agudas HaRabbanim. My son has to go and take the sandwiches out that he brings from the house, and the son of the big famous rabbi eats bacon sandwiches in the cafeteria right opposite my son, with no shame, no hesitation, no diffidence, no doubt. Do you hear what I'm saying? And it could very well be that the reason the Soloveitchik children were so strong, that the influence of the Western world did not budge them, was due to the Hasidic emotion they experienced first in Chaslovich Chabad and then in Warsaw. Mudgets, Gair, the Rav spoke about it. I caught him word by word. We wound up in Warsaw. We didn't have money to live in the fancy areas. Warsaw had beautiful areas. Warsaw was, I remember Rabbi Yoshua Hutnik telling me when he first came to Warsaw right after World War I, he was overwhelmed. It was a cosmopolitan city. There were telephones. There were newspapers from all over the world came into Warsaw. There were department stores. No, they didn't live there. We lived in the poorest area. What was the poorest area? Mudgets. Yeah. Okay. Warsaw had a great impact on them. Tamchei Tamimim, the apex of the reshet, of the chain of yeshivat, Warsaw. That's why the wedding was in Warsaw. Now, the story of the wedding, you can find here there's no contradiction. We have written records, we have memoirs. If you read the Chaim Miller's volume, you'll get it word by word. And, Rabbi Telushkin, Judge Joe Telushkin. I'm quoting from a Hasidic publication, Living with the Rebbe. Yad Kislev, Yud Dalet Kislev, Living with the Rebbe. Leben mitten Rebben. And here is the whole story of the wedding. And it's fascinating, the details. First of all, you can see how much effort the Sfriedik Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, the sixth Rebbe, the Riatz, put into it. Number one, he wrote a letter to the Hasidim still in Russia with a request that they fabrein on the wedding day. He wrote that although they would be separated by space, in heart they would be together. Now that's a beautiful Hasidic concept. And you have to understand what the word means in English, in Yiddish, in Hebrew. Hebrew they translate a fabrein in hitva adut. You follow? But I tell you, it loses. You have to use the word in English, fabreng, gam naseh fabreng in Hebrew. I like it better than hitva adut, but that may be because to me, my native Torah language is Yiddish, so maybe it rings better in fabreng. Now, what does it mean, fabreng? You see, and here too, the Hasidim have it over us Litvisha. I have to admit the truth. It's not that I'm going to become a Hasid, but I have to know what our strong points are and what our weak points are. Hasidim can meet. They can be in China. When they sit down together, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10 Hasidim, they break out a bottle of vodka. They break out lekach. And they talk a little Hasidus, and they'll open up a Tanya, and they'll start telling stories of the Rebbe, and they'll start a Hasidic Nigen. At that moment, you're transported. The Rav used to say about the Jewish people, we belong to a community which is above time. What did the Rav, I would hear him endless out, what does it mean, above time? Part of our community, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, our forefathers, Moshe Rabbeinu, Aaron HaKohen, Miriam HaNeviah, David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, Eliyahu HaNavi, Mashiach Tzidkenu. Where are we? Now you ask an American, tell me, do you have any connection to George Washington? Most kids today will say, who the heck is George Washington? What are you referring to, the Washington Bridge? Do you have any connection to Abe Lincoln? Who was he? What was he? What did he do? What did he think?
He made a tunnel.
What did you say?
He made a tunnel.
The Lincoln Tunnel, correct. He made a monument. But we Jews, I quote the Rav, for us, Avraham Avinu is more real than someone who lived 50 years ago. We Jews. Look at the Yishpizim, which again is Hasidic, Kabbalistic, but look what it tells us. You can find brain. Now I'll give you an example. I believe I write about this in Washington. If it's not in, it means it was the chapter that they emasculated on me. I should have fought them, but they felt the book was too big already, 500 plus pages. There's one chapter that I had to condense. It was the middle visit to Russia. But I'll tell you something, what it means of upbringing, of upbringing. The second visit to Russia was at a time of tremendous tension. I've said this many times. It was the storm before the lull. We weren't allowed to use any telephone, even the telephones in the streets. In 81, we were allowed to use the telephones in the streets. Now, nothing. You contact people unannounced, knock on their door. If they open, you go in. Anything we had to deliver messages, you go out again, go to a park. I have a picture, I believe the picture is in the Tifhat Mama, where I'm with Julie Khosharovsky, Zichrona Levracha, walking 30 degrees below zero and giving him the messages, totally surrounded by snow. So we arrive, I believe in 85, we flew into Leningrad. We get to the hotel, and we can't say a word, can't talk, and our first contact has to be Yitzchak and Sophia Kogan in Leningrad. They've moved. I have the new address. I open up the map. And everything I signal to Malka with signals, don't say one word, and I figure out exactly how to get there with the metro. And I signal her, we'll leave in an hour. We were told, wait until it's right before darkness, because the KGB changes shifts at that time, and it's a little bit easier towards the end of the first shift or the morning shift, a little bit easier because they're tired, you can perform a little bit easier. Okay, take the metro, and believe it or not, I'm right, we get there, I read the map correctly, we walk up the steps, knock on the door, Sophia opens the door, welcomes us in, recognized us immediately from 81, and there are two Chabad shluchim from South America. And there is Yitzchak Kogan, Sophia, Yitzchak's children, and a few teenagers from the Bessinrei. And they have a Fabrengen. I didn't know where I was. Vodka's on the table, Lekach's on the table, they're singing Hasidic songs, they're talking about the Rebbe, they're saying over a mima from the Rebbe. And here you are in Leningrad at the height of communist persecution. If you'll do your research in 85, they were taking Jews off the street and arresting them as Asirei Tzion, as Zionists. And you were transported to a different world. That means the Fabreng. Now, this is where, I'll put it in context, and I believe I told you this, Yomo, this is where I did something very naughty. Know what I did? I saw these chabatnikim, you know, with beards and the garb and the dress, Bindar Litvak. So I wanted to show them that I know a little bit. So I also picked up vodka, and I said, we have to drink to the Rebbe's health. And I said, it in Yiddish, I'll say it. And I want to make a l'chaim to the Rebbe, but we have to understand who the Rebbe comes from. And I listed out all seven generations of Chabad Rebbeim. And in each Rebbe, I said, what word or two, what they did, who they were. And these two Hasidim from South America, you know, simple Hasidim, they were in a state of shock. They looked at each other, Eken, he knows. Vikena, how does he know? I almost caused them to choke on the vodka. And it was very not nice on my part. My Litvische Gaiva got the best of me at that moment. But that's exactly what the Rebbe means. See, you have to understand. Someone reads this. He wrote a letter to Chassidim in Russia that they fabrein on the wedding day. If you don't understand Chassidus, you don't start to comprehend what this means. what the Rebbe is saying on the wedding day, using the wedding as a catalyst, tens and tens of thousands of people will suddenly wake up. Oh, Chabad is alive and kicking. Despite it all, despite Stalin, despite Lenin, despite communism, despite the persecution, despite the executions, despite the exile, we are alive and kicking. All right? That's number one. Number two, ordinary Hasidim received a printed invitation. In other words, those, the Anash, Anshei Shlomeinu, that was simple. There was print at that time, no different than today. Print up, face 1,000 invitations, and you send them out. Today, they don't even do that. I just got an invitation to a Chabad wedding in Toronto where it comes through email, comes through the internet. Sherry printed it out for me. It's even easier. All right, so obviously you get a printed invitation. All right, very nice. But former students of Tomchei Tamimim received a photocopy of a handwritten invitation by the Friedrich Rebbe. You see, Tomchei Tamimim was the greatest achievement in his life. He understood what it meant, a yeshiva, students learning tomorrow, guaranteed there'll be a tomorrow, spirit. So he wrote out, all right, how many personal invitations can you write out? By the way, you should know that this goes on in the Hasidic world until today. When they make a wedding, let's say the Belzer Rebbe makes a wedding and he wants to invite the Gera Rebbe, he doesn't send him a regular invitation. If he would send the Gera Rebbe a regular invitation, the Gera Rebbe gets 50,000 wedding invitations. Big deal. Maybe they have a system, Gabayim answer. Could be. I have Gabayim. You know, Dr. Belkin had a standard form letter. If you sent them a wedding invitation, his secretary sent you a telegram the night of the wedding. There were telegrams. You know what telegrams are. Yomo, you know what a telegram? How do you know what a telegram is? You never saw one in your life. Charlie, remember telegrams? That's before your time, too. But you remember, Baruch Hashem, you would get a telegram from Dr. Belkin. It was a standard form, but it was very nice. The secretary. But you're going to send the Gera Rebbe a printed invitation? His Gabbai will rip it up and throw it into the way. Ah, chutzpah? Zayim, Latman Dan, the Rebbe? This is the way you invite the Rebbe? So the Belzer writes out to quote Kedushato, Atmuami Lubavitch, Huabil Atmuami, Megur, Mechulu, Aniyat Kabed, Ma'od, you know, writes out inviting him personally. No, how many personal invitations can you write out? So the Rebbe wrote out a personal invitation. It's exactly what they do today. It's unbelievable. And then they photocopied, and each one they personalized by writing your name in. So all the graduates of Tomchei Tamimim got more than a printed invitation. They got a personalized invitation. Today they can do it with the computer. You get a letter, Dear Aaron, you will recall that every year I raise money, Moyes Chitin, there's a certain fund I give to every year. Dear Malka and Aaron, that part is amazing because 20,000 people will get that letter, but the computer puts in your name, Dear Chana and Chaim, and you can't tell the difference. It looks like it's all personalized. So that's what the sixth Rebbe did with the students. Ah. Elder Hasidim received a handwritten invitation, written by the Friedrich Rebbe and their name personalized on it, and concluding with a signature. So what does that mean? That already the Elder Chassidim, the Choshev Chassidim, the Chassidim haben gesetzt Eben Un. Do you know that expression? Eben Un. That means those that sat close to the Rebbe, they already got a letter written by the Rebbe, photocopied. But there the Rebbe wrote in the top to whom it's addressed in his handwriting, my entire chassid, the Chad Meyanshei Shlomeinu, Reb Chaim Yankel, Chetina, Tokava, whatever his name was, and the Rebbe signed it with his own signature. Alex, if you would have one of those letters signed with the Rebbe's signature today and brought it into Sotheby's, your next year's expenses would be covered. Got it? Your next year expenses would be covered. But you see, it shows you this was handled like a military operation. Have you ever seen a fallout ceremony in Tzfach HaGanah Yisrael? They know how to do it with class. It's a military operation. They know who to invite. They know who's going to speak. They know the gifts they're going to give out. Everything is planned in advance. Nothing is left to chance. This is the preparation for the wedding. Now, what's fascinating is where the Urfruf was. The Urfruf was in Riga, not in Warsaw. Riga was where the sixth Rebbe was. And I've said this more than once, I say it again. I was in Riga in 1985. The Rebbe left Riga in the 1930s to go to Warsaw. I can tell you that in Riga you still felt the atmosphere of the Rebbe's being there. It was amazing. The Eltere Yidden, their whole Yiddishkeit centered on the fact that they yet knew the sixth Rebbe. I can tell you what was meant for bringing, but did have you that happened to me. Riga, that 1985 January was the coldest weather I ever was in. It was 40 below zero. I could elaborate. I had a miracle. I'm lucky to be alive. It's Mamash Meisim Yisim, the Abish, the saved me. Evidently, I had to teach more Torah. But I went out of the hotel on Friday looking for the shul. I wouldn't let Malka go out. It was 40 below zero. And I came back after being in 40 below zero, and I took a bath before Shabbos. And the communist system, the fanciest hotel in Riga, didn't have any cold water. It was all hot. I didn't realize how hot it would be. And I started to faint in the water. And I would have fainted. I would have drowned. No one would know. I mean, I'm taking a bath. I lifted myself up, and I said to Malka, I'm fainting. Light candles in 10 minutes. I'll go to sleep. I went to sleep, and I woke up an hour later, and I felt fine. When I got back to Israel, I consulted my students who were doctors, and they explained to me, you went from tremendously cold temperature to boiling hot water, and that has an impact on the body. So Shabbos, I wouldn't let Malka go to shul. She did not go to shul. I walked to the shul. I knew the shul. Regular, the only shul that survived in Riga, regular davening, KGB agents, Jews who sold their soul, which I don't want to criticize because we don't know what we would have done had we been in their position. God have mercy what it was like. Later, people start going, and the chazan says to me, Vat on, wenn ze von gehen, von mir gehen, and he points upstairs. I didn't know what he meant. Or let me say it in English. Wait here. Don't leave. When they leave, they leave. I understood right away what he meant. The agents will go upstairs. When they left, we went upstairs. About six men, old timers, yours truly, and they broke out vodka with kichel, and we started telling stories about Chabad and the Rebbe, and what a feeling, what a fakiddish, what a fabrengen. We were transported, you see? So that's exactly what Riga was about. You could feel the presence of the Rebbe. And that's the story with Alona Einstein. You know what I'm about to say? I don't want to repeat myself, but it's worth telling the story. If you don't know it, I don't even know why I told it last. No, who is the most famous? And when I came in Aliyah, there were two names, Uri Zohar and Arik Einstein. You heard those names. And their wives, and the movies, and their songs, and their television programs. And then Uri Zohar discovers Yiddishkeit. An Anglo plays a big role in it. A rabbi from England, Rabbi Zilberberg. If you know the English, the British translation of Rashi, that was by his father. He ran a Talmud in the old city. He lived in Shari Chesed. And Uri Zohar is introduced to him, and Uri Zohar says, I have thousands of questions to ask you. And the rabbi says to him, don't bother asking me your questions. I'll answer them all without one word of conversation. Spend the Shabbat in my home. So Uri Zohar says, fine. And Rabbi Zilberberg says, but on condition you don't drive, you have to stay in a local hotel. No problem. And Uri Zohar comes, I think he stayed in the President Hotel, actually, the King's Hotel, what today is called the Prima Malachim, I think. And he walks the few blocks to the home. He's there at night. He's there by day, he's there by Havdalah, and at the end of that Shabbos, his whole life changed. And Uri Zohar said, our children don't talk to us. And here, when you enter the room, your children stand up for you. And the rabbi answered, they're not standing up for me. They're standing up for all the generations that came before me that enabled me to be and live like a Jew at this moment in time. And those words pierced Uri Zohar's heart. What's more miraculous is his wife went along with him. She married a Sheikitz, an actor, a singer, a joker. And she went along with him. What's more amazing is his older children, who were already teenagers, went along with him. Arik Einstein absolutely refused, even wrote a song, My Best Friend Has Left Me. Hu chazah b'tshuva, the leftist people had joy out of the song. But Arik Einstein had another problem. Alona, his wife, who was also part of this scheme, situation, lifestyle, values, she saw Uri Zohar, saw his wife. Behigamke. She also became frum, but not just frum, she became a tzaddikit. All her energies devoted to chesed, ran in gemach, for kalas, she's no longer alive, in Bnei Brak. And she was privileged. She told the story in the 1990s, it was overwhelming. She grew up in Riga. She was a little girl. And thank God they got out right before Hitler came in Aliyah. Zionist parents, social Zionists, secular Zionists. And before she left Riga, this Chabadnik, who was their neighbor, said to her, so the alamod de gedenken as du bist a yiddish tochter. You should always remember that you're a Jewish daughter. And she long forgot that, what it meant, what the implications were. And then she comes to Yiddishkeit, Torah Hashem. Do you know that in the early 1990s, this man in his 90s gets out of Riga, the Great Exodus, and comes an Aliyah. And she goes to see him and says to him, I thank God, ich hab gedenkt, was du hat mir gesagt, ich bin a jüdische Tochter. Thank God, I remembered what you told me. I'm a Jewish girl. And you see, this was the Rebbe, this was Riga. This is why the Ufrif had to be in Riga. Couldn't do it all in Warsaw. He was living in Riga. And they had to be part of the Simcha. The Ufrif was in Riga. And the Rebbe's parents are not there. It was the widow of the fifth Rebbe, Rav Shalom Dovber's widow, Rebbe's in Sternesara, the mother of the sixth Rebbe, who made the dinner following the davening, and in her apartment, the Rebbe delivered a mimer of Chassidus, and everyone is dancing, and freilach, and happy. And as the dancing subsided, the Rebbe delivered a sicha, which he lifted his cup and announced, I shall now bless our brethren who are left behind the Iron Curtain. Tears streamed from the eyes of all present, while the Rebbe continued with the wishful words of blessing. That was the Ufrif. And that's why in Riga, and that was the impact. So let me reiterate. What have we done so far today? We heard about Rabbi Rubin's involvement with this beautiful Geirut, and in the papers, the picture of a Chatan V'Kala who had been married for 25 years with 4 children, and now Shomrei Torah Mitzvah Kanayin Har, very successful people with wonderful children, Alat Mata Kodesh, were doing a lot better than they did at the times of Ezra Nehemiah. Study Ezra Nehemiah, and you'll understand what I'm saying, with all the difficulty and all the problems. We're starting to talk about the Rebbe's wedding. We're just scratching the surface, but at least I've explained why there was this wait from 23 to 28. And the tragedy of the wedding, with all the joy, could you imagine getting married and your parents are not there? And put this into Hasidic context with Hasidic yichus. The Ufrif had to be in Riga because that's where the sixth Rebbe was, that's where his influence emanated from. But the preparation for the wedding was like a military operation. The different types of invitations. And I wonder whether any of the handwritten invitations with the Rebbe's signature survive. I can tell you that Jay Solomon bid and won an invitation to Moriah Rebbe's wedding, to Rebbe Tzimtanya, but there's no handwriting on it. It's only a printed little invitation from Vilna, and I'm always maketovet to Jay right after he won. The first person he gave the original copy to, he lent it to me to Xerox for my research. And I think I've told you, Jay, I wanted to publish it in the Soloveitchik, the Rav, the world of, but Tova said it's too personal. Today, all that has been published, and if nothing is personal anymore, that is ultimately what happens when you're in the public limelight. I wouldn't miss next week's shiur for all the Mangolim that will take place this Thursday, and I have to make a special Shechianu because I'm invited to a Mongol at my grandson. My grandchildren are hosting at their grandson's home, my granddaughter-in-law, my grandson, Kenayin Hara. That's a very special Mongol. Rabbaron Lichtenstein, and I mentioned this on Shabbos to some of the people that were with me, he always was one of us, and yet he always was above us. I met him first in 1951 when I entered the yeshiva. He's 5 years older than I am. So we called him the babe. He had a round face. I have a grandson like that, a big round. I used to call it, I used to look at my grandson and say, he looks like the moon, like the moon. And as he grows older, of course, he grows smaller, but you can still see the babe in him. We called Aaron the babe, and we used to play basketball with him. He was one of the boys, but not really. We were overwhelmed by his knowledge, by his brilliance. At 16, he graduated high school, Chaim Berlin, did all the regents. 16 to 18, he sat in the Beit Midrash, just going through Shas al Haseda. He knew, as you know, every Amud in Shas by heart. I don't believe he ever went through Shas again, Al Haseda, like he did in the Chaim Berlin based Medrash. But what a memory. And then when we sat in class with him, knowing we all talk about it, like we fabreng, we relive the moments. So you all know the Rav sat here. Aaron sat right there against the wall. Between Aaron and the Rav were 3-4 rows of students. You can look at the picture. Picture my, I published it twice already in the Rav, and I published it in Washington. 3-4 rows of students. Now, the Rav had a unique memory. He could remember sugyas, couldn't remember the exact daf. And he would, let's say, quote, and say, Aaron, avu shteit. Was war daf? And Aaron would shoot back at him immediately. I told Meir Lichtenstein yesterday morning in Beit Shemesh that in 4 years that I sat, the Rav is, I've learned with him in 4 years and every day afterwards, but the 4 years I sat in the classroom and Rav Aaron was there, those 4 years, I'll tell you why in a second. Only once was he wrong. It was this, I remember, it was a sugi in Abe Psachim, and Aaron says, it's Kuf Bet Omid Aleph. And we open up the Gemara, the Rav opened the Bebereng Ma Psachim, bring me a kid runs up to Gottesman, brings down a Psachim, and it was Kuf Aleph Omid Bet. See, the sugi began there, but the exact words the Rav was looking for were not in Kuf Bet, it was in Kuf Aleph Amid Bet. It was a continuous sugya. In 4 years, that was the one time that Aaron was off by a numit, by a line or two. And it's unbelievable who he was, the knowledge. And yet, one of the boys, we could kibitz with him, we could joke with him. We used to keep track of his dates. We guys would meet him, you know, where he went, which Broadway show, farm food, did he eat, didn't he eat? He was like the gold standard for us. But you see, Rav Aaron wasn't raised on a tree. He was raised by parents. And you had to have known his parents to appreciate where he was coming from. These were people that ran away from Hitler, wound up in France, wound up in Chicago, finally come to New York. Aaron spent formative years in Chicago. The world doesn't realize this. He was in B'nai Akiva in Chicago. He was in the day school in Chicago. But his parents got better teaching jobs in New York, and that's how they come to New York. His father had a PhD, Father Yechiel, a dignified dignified gentleman. It was a rachmanis he had to put up. He was teaching in BTA, I think in Central perhaps as well. You can imagine the type of gangsters you have to deal with on a high school level. And I personally, I tell you, I feel very bad because in 1972, I believe it can be checked, Bernard Revel appeared. Bernard Revel's appearing was very big for BMT because BMT was first getting on the map and they wanted to show they had a faculty member who published a book by JPS. You don't realize what that was. Today, JPS, you don't even know if it exists or not. But then JPS was the premier publisher of books and this is the first Orthodox book. They were controlled by the conservative movement, basically. They made a big deal for me on Rehov Ababonel, where BMT began. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein was the speaker. He reviewed the book. And because Rabbi Aaron was speaking, it had to be 72, because he was here already. And he brought his parents, you know, to come that night. They had come in Aliyah. And his father comes over to me and says, "I envy you," he says. "I taught these kids in high school just a few years ago. They were gangsters, and they sit here with such derech eretz for you." That's what his father said to me. And Nebuch, I understand already what he must have gone through. Rabbi Aaron's mother was genius. Her father was a mankal, one of the administrators of Tel's Yeshiva, in Tel's, the real Tel's. Tel's Yeshiva published Chidush Torah, articles, insights. His mother published in the Tel's Yeshiva Torah Journal with a pseudonym of a men, because Tells, as open-minded as it was, Ellie, could not publish. Could you imagine Lakewood today putting out, and Tells was not Lakewood, don't misunderstand me, Tells at that time, not talking about Tells today, but could you imagine Lakewood today putting out a Choveret of Kiddushei Torah, and there you have a woman, wow, under a pseudonym. These were his parents. Both parents, but the mother was something overwhelmingly special. The relationship between them, between Rabbi Aaron and Tova and the parents, I need not tell you an example of what Kibbutz Avayim is all about. Something else about Rabbi Aaron that had a deep influence on me, and I don't know if it comes from Rabbi Aaron or both of us are influenced by the Rav. The greatest gift that we got is to be positive, to be open-minded, not to be critical. I had Rebbeim Litvakenzeim Galacht from the ganze Welt. No one else knows anyone, no one else counts, no one else has insight, everyone is an idiot. I need not tell you, don't have to go into detail. I just mentioned Shabbos to someone after I spoke. Could you imagine Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik, did he ever dream I would quote him something? What would I quote it? Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik, I believe, I forget already what. But did he ever dream I would talk about him in Hebrew in the state of Israel? And you know, the Rav, and it could be as a result of the Rav's life, that he was exposed to, in Prushana, to the Brisk Velashen tradition. He was exposed to Chabad in Chaslovich. He was exposed to Ger in Warsaw and Mudgetz in Warsaw. And then he goes to Germany and Torum Derech Eretz. And either you reach a decision that you're the only one who has truth, or you reach a more valid understanding that Shevim Panim LeTorah, and anything that enhances Torah is wonderful and good. And that's something we had from the Rav. It's something that Aaron Lichtenstein totally, completely represented. He grew up in Crown Heights. he yet knew the Lubavitcher Rebbe when the Rebbe wasn't so famous yet. But that multidexterousness and multifacetedness, that feeling that there's a lot of different approaches. We have one approach. There are other approaches. And that I gained from Rebbe Aaron. And that's going back to 1980, 81 in this kollel, not in this room. It was kollel met in rooms that don't exist. We rebuilt. But I'll never forget, kid, I've told you more than once, a kid came back from the Gush. Oh, my brother-in-law is all upset. This is Abby Kelman, Rabbi Kelman. And Abby says to me, Rebbe, you don't know what happened. Rebbe Aaron had a press conference. And he was asked, who do you feel closer to? The secular Jew in North Tel Aviv, what we call in modern Hebrew, Tzafonim. It's a new modern Hebrew expression, Tzafonim. You got to know what it means. Or the Jew in Mea Shearim. And Rebbe Aaron, what's the question? I feel, of course, to the Jew in Mea Shearim. And these kids, many were upset. And they wanted to know my opinion. And I told them, when push comes to shove, I totally agree with Rebbe Aaron. You know, it's not, we have one way. There are many ways. Rebbe Aaron gave a whole talk. I believe it was written up right in the Gush, that there's a lot we can learn from the Haredi world. That we all feel they can learn a lot from us, absolutely. I don't deny it. They can learn a lot from us. But there's a lot we can learn from the Haredi world. The emotion, the dedication, the ibigigebenkeit to learning. You take Panovich, you take Chevron at that time, I'm talking about Panovich today. We lack that in the Hesder world. We don't hit it at that high percentage, at that high velocity, at that high decibel. We lack. We can learn. And that was a broadness that Rebbe Aaron had. And I'll tell you what's fascinating. The greatest achievement of all, and I imagine you have to say Tova's name first, the woman has great impact, all six children are in Chinuch Rabbanus, Rabbanut Chinuch, all six. That's a tremendous credit. Not all of them think alike. That's also to Rebbe Aaron's credit. Not all of them think alike. You have one Haredi. They run the spectrum of the Tzionut Datit, right or wrong. They're not all in exactly the same camp. Religious Zionist camp today, thank God, is very big. And when it's very big, there's machloikis. I don't look at it as machloikis. I want to say it's dialogue, discussion. There can be differences. There are differences of opinion. No two ways about it. But I don't look at the differences. I look at the achievement and the unity we should have. It's a tremendous credit to Rebbe Aaron. And I have to say, Kolzman, he was active in the Kollel. I had confidence no harm would ever happen to Chris Kollel. Because when you look around the YU world, you speak of the Rav, the influence of the Rav, and you ask yourself, who is the Talmud Mufak who best represents the totality of the Rav? And the answer is, no question, Rebbe Aaron Lichtenstein. No one equals him. The gotlet in learning, the insight in learning, the breitkeit in learning. Rebbe Aaron, kol haTorah kula. And beyond it, the broadness of general knowledge, the openness, overwhelming. And I end off with a little story that Rebbe Aaron just was told to me a few weeks ago, that someone, I think I told it to you in class, so I mentioned it somewhere, but I repeat it again in context. Someone came to Rebbe Aaron, a Talmud of his from the Gush, and he said, Rebbe, you know, we have little children at home. my wife and I can't leave at the same time. Is it fair that I go to daven Shabbos morning and my wife has to stay at home? Maybe I should go 3 weeks out of the month and 1 week I should babysit and my wife should go. And if you had asked that question of Yeruchim Gerelik, he would have flung you out of the window head first. If you had asked that question of Ararat Kefir, he would have flung you out of the window with half the velocity of Yeruchim Gerelik. He asked Rav Aaron, Rav Aaron answered him, you're asking a Rebbe from the wrong generation. You have to ask someone in your generation. And that little incident catches Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. It's so hard to say. Yehi Zichro Baruch. Hard to say. A mensch bleibt a mensch. That I told you, right? I was all aufgeblasen. Oh, what chitushim! But didn't I say it earlier today? And I had drawn up the shear, and I'm so proud of myself, and I have shas and paiskin, and I'm ready to take on the world. And then I was told about Rav Aaron Lichter. I didn't mention his name before. That's what I was referring to. Didn't I say it today, or am I daydreaming? I said it. That's what I was talking about. I was told about Rav Aaron's condition. Forget it, Habas of Adam. Okay, I have a lot of... First of all, whoever wants a copy of what Yitzhru been accomplished, that's here. One more copy, the Mishnah Brura. I said yesterday I was born too soon. They're coming out with a new edition in English. No one but no one raised outside of Israel will ever know Hebrew again. Anyone wants a copy put out by the Zionist, World Zionist Organization, or... I know the editor, unbelievable, the assistant editor, Lifshid Ben Shach. She's a direct descendant of the Shach. Very interesting articles, intellectuals in the state of Israel today. Which way do we turn? Anyone who wants Jewish Action, two copies with a very interesting, do Jews have a future in Europe, okay? Interesting. Look at Nachmanson, the president's article. I spoke about it yesterday in class. You'll find it here. NCSY and all the great things they are doing. Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho, anyone living in Israel, beautiful. Now the articles. Anyone who's caught up with Rabbi Weisner, who just died, and his Vosna and his relationship with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, interesting. The Hasidic world through the eyes of a Jewish heretic. This, if you read Joseph Berger's book, The Pious Ones, that came out a few months ago, he quotes from the manuscript that just came out as a book. It's by Shulam Dean. It's another autobiography of someone who grew up. He grew up in the square world. And he runs away with his heart and soul, with hatred, enmity, etc., etc. Mr. Shulam Dean, I invite you to study with Aaron Rakefin in Yerushalayim. This is with gay marriages, what we're up against. It's unbelievable, from the New York Times. Top law firm, no law firm will take on a case to come out against gay marriages because they'll lose all their business for being infidels and believing that you cannot have gay marriages. This is Obama calls for rent for conversion therapies for gay and transgender youth. And Aaron Rakefit tells him in 56 years of teaching, he has had students with gay problems. They were helped by psychologists. Some, most straightened out entirely, some half and half, but they were all helped. Picture of the day, Ashrenu Shezlachinu, Aaron Cutler of Lakewood with Rabbi Levi Shemtov, Executive VP of American Friends of Lubavitch. That Lakewood and Lubavitch can stand together is a beautiful sign, or it means that they no longer understand who the original Rabbi Aaron Cutler was all about. YU, anyone here who went to YU, Richard Joel hosts Sumber Town Hall meeting. Take a look what the students are saying to Richard Joe. Prenuptial agreements, they are not the ultimate answer. Very fascinating article. I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but it's worth reading. Everyone is invited to a collation for Chodesh Tov. Please join us. Okay.